Okay, today's topic is a sefer. It's called Chaim Aruchim. Chaim Aruchim is spelled with an ayin, not with an aleph. Very cute name for a sefer. Chaim Aruchim with an aleph means long life.
Right.
With an ayin, it means arranged.
Arranged for you.
A life that's mesuda. A life that is.
As a seder.
Exactly. It's a very clever. It's a very clever title.
It's a plain words.
Plain words. It's a brilliant title. It's not a typo. Okay, it's not a typo. Yes. What is the sefer all about? The sefer was written by a very great Talmud Chacham whose name is Chaim Atik. Okay, it sounds like an Israeli name of Sephardi. I don't think he's a Sephardi. He's not a Sephardi. He has a Haskama from Avad Yosef. See that? Haskama from Avad Yosef. And he has a Haskama from a lot of Litvaks. A lot of Litvaks as well. Rav Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, of Chaim Scheinberg. Of Baruch Sheikhit. This is from Stolen. Okay, so he has over here some very choshva haskamas, extremely chosh. Now, what is the sefer about? Okay, the sefer is all about the life of Avraham Avinu. It's a fascinating sefer where he dissects all of the various midrashim, Amar Chazal, about Avraham Avinu, and he reconstructs his life and brings out very powerful ideas, all within the Hashkof of Chazal. It's a very, very powerful sefer. It's not easy reading, at least for me. So I want to just go over some ideas, a couple of ideas that I have been able to extract from the first chapter. Okay, a few just short ideas, nothing very heavy. Things that I found to be, they are new to me, and I found them to be interesting. The first thing is, when was Avraham Avinu born? What year was he born?
1948,
exactly. And I just want to start by mentioning, nothing is a coincidence. It's not a coincidence. The way the years are, it's not a coincidence that Avraham Avinu was born in the same year when the state of Israel was right. Secular number one. I'll give you an example. This made a very big version of me from Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And I think about this all the time. Someone went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky and he said to him that, you know, my father was a very chasher person in the Medina, in the Knesset, this and that, and he was a very Talmud Chacham, he was a real Haredi, but you know, he had friends with, you know, people in the Knesset that weren't so ay-ay-ay, and they want to honor my father. My father was, again, a great Talmud Chacham, Yerushmayim, and they want to name a street after him. They want to name a street in, in Tel Aviv after him. Should I let them do it? My father, you know, he was a tzaddik. They don't really understand who my father was. They think he's a politician, but this is meaningless, shy, goyish thing to name a street. You don't have a chazal. You ever find a chazal somewhere? They name a street after a tana. Okay, they do in Eretz Yisrael, but as he asked, Rav Chaim Kanievsky, should I let them name a street after my father? Number one, show me a makor in chazal that it's the right thing to do. To name a street after a Talmud Chacham. Number two, there's going to be Chil Shabbos. They can do it in Tel Aviv. There's going to be massive Chil Shabbos. My father's name is going to be on the street. Rav Chaim Kanievsky said, as far as Chil Shabbos is concerned, that's not your problem. It's not your problem. You're not telling anyone about Chil Shabbos. The day will come when there won't be Chil Shabbos, so that's not your problem. As far as telling me that you don't have a makor anywhere, b'cholat or akula, that naming a street after a person is chashav, let me give you a better example. We'll name a car. Right? We'll have a new model of a car, and we'll be called after this. So Rav Chaim said to him, if in the Welt it's chashav, it's chashav. Just because there's no makor in chazal doesn't mean it doesn't have significance. You're right, there's no pasuk, there's no gemara, there's no mishnah, there's no tesefta, there's no medrash, but in the Welt, in the world, it's a chashuv thing. You name a street after a person, wow, that's, so it's chashuv. If you want to name a street after your father, it's a covet to your father and you should go through with it. It's a very powerful thing. Not everything is a chazal. We calculate the years from the common era, okay, well, it's based on, let's not get into it, it's based on whatever it's based on, but the bottom line is, that's how the years, that's how the world, the whole world, there are 7 billion people in the world, and pretty much, that's the way the world is numbered today. There's something called 1948. And Adam Ravina was born 1948 years into Briyas Olam. You can't say, goyish, and knock it off. You can't do that. You can't say that. There's something there. There is some koyach there that Kadosh Baruch Hu is speaking to us in some direct, indirect way and telling us, Avraham Avinu was the first one to be makir, the Ribbono Shel Olam, the first one from to whom the land was promised to. And here in the year 1948, it's a very significant event that's happening in the world where the world is makir, there's an Eretz Yisrael, and the land belongs to Klal Yisrael. It's like being named after Avraham Avinu. You can't say it's just wipe it off and say some ultra right wing Haredi statement. Forget about it. Nothing to forget about. That's a very significant thing in and of itself. Next thing, Avraham Avinu, the Torah presents us. He we know that he lived for 175 years. This is where the parasha begins. Vayomer Hashem l'Avraham lech lecha mi'artzecha, and the pasuk goes on to say how old was Avraham Avinu when he left Haran. He was 75 years old. So the first 75 years, the Torah does not focus on. We have a lot. There's a lot of stuff we know about his life from the Midrashim, but it's not in the Torah. It's not there. In fact, it is in the Torah, but it's indirectly mentioned in the Torah. Torah doesn't make an issue out of it. The Torah focuses primarily on Avraham Avinu's life, starting from 75 years until he died, which is 175. 100 years. That's very interesting. That 100 years. What is the significance? Asar was 100 years old when Yitzchak was 100 years old when Avraham went. Who was 100 years old? Avraham was 100 years old when he was born. Asar was 90. The number 100, a century, there's something to it. The Torah focuses on 100 years in the life of Avraham. Anything the Torah is going to go back in his life later on and focus on, which we'll get to in a moment, is only in reference, relation to Avraham Avinu's life from that year 75 all the way until year 175. What is the significance? I don't know. But it's a very nice round number. And with a nice round number, you can't just look the other way and say it's insignificant. Okay, let's go to another idea. Now, everyone reads the Haggadah. We all know in the Yichus, Avraham had two brothers. Who are the two brothers? Nachor and Haran. Who came from Nachor? Avram's wife. Avram Sarai was a child of...
He married
his cousin, his niece. That was the daughter of Nachor. Okay, so they're related. So, and who was the father of them all? Terach. Terach had three children. Everyone knows he had three children. Nachor, Haran, and Avram. Who was the oldest? I think Haran was the oldest.
Yeah.
And then who came next? Came Avram was next. Haran was the baby brother. He was the youngest brother. That's what appears to be, if I'm not mistaken, that appears to be correct. He was the young brother. Now, here's the big, the $6 million question. Or the $600,000, what's the show?
$64,000
question. Question is, we all read the Haggadah. When Yeshua is about to die, Yeshua gives it savah to Klal Yisrael. Make sure you go in Hashem's ways. Don't abandon Hashem. And when do we read about Yeshua's savah to Klal Yisrael? When? The night of Pesach in the Haggadah. What's the pasuk? Be'ever hanohor Yoshu avoseichem me'olam. When we begin to describe our history and we talk about Ever Hanor, Terach. Terach gets honorable mention in the Haggadah. Terach, who is Terach? The Haggadah part of the pasuk Yeshua says, Avi Avraham v'Avi Nachor.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. There's someone missing. What happened? What happened to Haran? How come it's missing? Everyone asked this question. What happened to Haran? Haran, what happened to Haran? Where do you go? Terach was only the father of Avraham and Nachor. What happened? Everyone is very, this great drush for Haggadah. Everyone struggles. The Ramban, The Ramban answers the question. Ramban here gives the answer. I don't know exactly where the Ramban is. He's close to Ramban. A very simple answer. And this was very historical. It totally opens up a whole new understanding of, but you put the whole thing in perspective, you definitely get a whole new flavor of what's going on. Where did Avraham originally live? When Terach, where do they live? They lived originally in Aram, in the Eivir Hanor. What's Eivir Hanor? Aram. Aram was the superpower of the world until the time of David. That's what we learned in the Rehayanim. David HaMelech, he went to war against, that was Ammon, and Ammon hired Aram. Aram was a major player. Nochar lived in Aram. Aram Tzoiva, Aram this, Aram that, a lot of Arams. Aram is the country of Shem. After the Mabul, Shem, Chom, and Yefes, they split up. Shem occupied the part of the world which turned into Aram. Nochar is a native member of Aram. Aram in ancient times was called the Eiver HaNor. Now we don't know why, but for whatever reason, and when Terach lived in Aram, he had a wife. We even know the name of his wife. It's a Gemara. It's not anywhere in Chazal. It's nothing more than a tradition. The name of Terach's wife was Amtalai. Amaslai, Aleph Mem Tov Lamed Aleph Yud. Amaslai, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Amaslai. This was the name of Avraham's mother. She was the wife of Terach. She must have been a very chashva woman. If she was the mother to Avraham Avinu, Ima Shel Malchus, she was the mother. She, and it doesn't say this anywhere in Chazal, anywhere in any possible. It's a tradition. The Gemara tells us we have a tradition. L'tshuva Sanur to answer the Apikarsin that we know everything what's going on. We know our history. This was the mother. She was the mother to Nochor and to the mother Avraham. At some point in time, it's not clear why Terach says, "I'm leaving." Taxes are just, real estate taxes in Aram are just too high. I can't afford tuition in Aram. I am out of here. I'm going to the new land. I'm going to go to the other side of the river, to Bavel. In Bavel is where all the action is. There's a guy there, his name is Nimrod. He's a young guy. He's a rising star. He is starting a new country. I'm going to be loyal to Nimrod. I want to check it out. I'm out of here. He crossed over Aram, and he went to this place called Shinar, which also known as Bavel Aram Naharai. When he was there, it seems that something happened to Avraham's mother. Either she died, or he took a second wife, and in Aram Naharayim he married another woman and had another son called Haran. So therefore, when the Pasuk in Sefer Yeshua, this is where the Ramban and Shan, the Pasuk tells about that, exactly, Haran was a half-brother. And also, not only was he a half-brother, it's more than that. He was brought up in a different country. So he had a different upbringing, and he related to Avraham very differently than he related to Nochar. That's why the main brother of Avraham, we want to go talk about Terach, Avi Avraham v'Avi Nochar. The two primary children of Terach were Avraham and Nochar, who grew up with Terach in Aram, from the same mother of Amtalai. Later, they went to Bavel, and in Bavel, they met up with Nimrod. He remarried. Terach had another child called Haran. Okay, so that's just an interesting point. They keep that Terach came to Aram Naharim at a later point in time in his life. Now,
so 75 years difference.
So the 75 what? Who doesn't say 75
years? 75 year difference between Abraham and Noah.
No.
You said
that
he crossed over.
They crossed over. No, younger, very young in their life. Early in their life, they crossed over. Yeah. Terach had two children.
75 years.
Terach.
Okay, now let me tell you. Okay, now let me tell you a medrash. This medrash says a lot. It really says a lot about Klal Yisrael, and it says a lot about Terach, and it says a lot about Nimrod. It's a very innocent medrash, but on this medrash you can build a foundation for the entire Klal Yisrael. Very simple medrash. Avraham, they arrive. The family arrives in Aram Naharaim. Now, there's a lot more to the story, a lot of more details. It could be there are different midrashim which disagree. The details that are not in agreement with each other. Nimrod started a new religion, and a religion revolved around himself. Nimrod was different than all other leaders of the time. All other leaders of the world at that time worshipped the stars. They worshipped the Zohar. They worshipped idols. They worshipped all different things. Nimrod was smart enough to recognize that there's no value in any of these idols. The only one to worship is only real God is Hashem. To a certain degree, he was religious, but Nimrod knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he rebelled against HaKadosh Baruch Hu and created a religion that centered around himself. He declared to the world that he is God. He is a God. He was the first one to invent this concept that a human being can be a God. Everyone else until that point in time was worshipping idols.
King deity.
But he's a God. Who refused to obey, to join? Avram, we know that story. Avram refused to bow down to Nimrod, and that was just Nimrod. Nimrod also had gods. I don't know all the details. He worshipped fire. We'll come to that a little bit later on. There were other gods which were tofel to him, which he wanted Avram to bow down to. Avraham refused to bow to worship Nimrod. Now Nimrod was a stargazer, and he saw, according to the Medrash, and he saw in the stars that there's going to be a person that's going to be born, or there's a person that exists already in this world that's going to challenge his Malchus and will one day destroy everything that he is trying to accomplish. And Nimrod was terrified from this person, and he, through looking in the stars at some point in time, he was able to recognize that it was the child of Terach. It was none other than Avram. Nimrod demanded from Terach that Terach hand over his son Avram to be killed in order to put an end to this threat. Of course, Terach refused to hand over Avram. And the Midrash goes on to say that Avram hid in a cave for 13 years, hiding from Nimrod because Nimrod wanted to kill him because he was a threat. At one point in time, when Nimrod was trying to negotiate with Terach, Nimrod said to Terach, "If you give me your son Avram, you hand him over to me, I will give you all of the gold and silver in the world. I'll give you billions of dollars. There's nothing that you can possibly want that I won't give you if you'll only give me your own child." So this is an amazing thing. Terach responds as follows. He says, let me give you a mashal, he says to Nimrod. Go over to a horse, and you say to the horse, "Horse, you're very hungry. A horse likes stable, likes straw, likes fodder. I'll give you all the stables in the world, all the food you can possibly want, if you'll just let me chop your head off." That's what he said to him. Is this make any sense? It's ridiculous. What's ridiculous? Because if you chop the head of the horse off, the horse is dead. It has no need to eat the fodder. There's nothing to eat. Terach says to Nimrod, "If you'll give me all of the gold and silver in the world, and I'll give you my son, what is all the gold and silver in the world worth? I have no one to bequeath, to be moirish this enormous wealth." That is what Terach said to Nimrod. Now let me ask you a question. What then was Nimrod thinking? It seems that Terach didn't hold from Nachar. It's a very good question. Why wasn't he considering giving all the gold and give it over to Nachar? Obviously, Nimrod, to some degree, Terach felt that his future was in Avram, not in Nachar. Okay, it's a good question, but let's just focus for a moment on this point. what then was the marshal is a very good marshal. The marshal is a brilliant marshal. He gave me all the money in the world. What's it worth? Because I have no one to give the money to. So what then was Nimrod's suggestion? Nimrod wasn't a fool. When Nimrod said to Terach, "Give me your son. Let me, and I'll give you a reward. I'll give you all the gold and silver in the world." This disagreement between Nimrod and Terach is the shoresh of Klal Yisrael. What do we mean? Nimrod said to Terach, "What are you living in this world for? The world starts and ends with yourself. You don't have to think about the future generations. Who cares? Look at me. I'm a god. Everyone in this world is worshipping me. The world begins and ends with my pleasure, with my hana, my existence. I care about children. The only purpose I have children is the children should serve me. They should be my slaves. They should enhance my honor, my dignity. Once I'm gone, who cares about them? So I'm now giving you all the gold and silver in the world. With the gold and silver, you could hire slaves, servants. You could have everything you possibly want. You could live a good life." Terach says to Nimrod, "You got it all wrong." Now Terach was no tzaddikal. Terach was no avodah zarah. But one thing Terach got right, and that concept he got right is the starting point of the Klal Yisrael. Terach says to Nimrod, "I don't live for myself. The purpose of my existence is the next generation. The purpose of my existence is to give over to the next generation. If you will give me all the gold and silver in this world, and you take away my son, I have no one to give the gold and silver to. For myself? That's the difference between me and you. You live for yourself, I live for my children." This, although it's pasha to us, this is how every living person lives today, that's a davar pasha, I don't know after the world existed, you live for your children, it was a new concept. It was a novel idea at the time. People at the time were extremely selfish. Terach invented the concept, you live for the next generation. Terach became, so to speak, a certain degree, the founder of Klal Yisrael. He was Moiresh, he bequeathed this Midah to Avraham. And Avraham, what does Avraham complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Uben Neshek, Uben Danesek Eliezer, who Yoresh Osi. What's it all worth? By the Bris Ben HaBesarim, Avraham Avinu says to Hashem, "Very nice, I survived the four kings, the five kings, this, that. What's it all worth? I don't have a Moiresh. I don't." Where did Avraham Avinu get that concept? What do you care? So you don't have a Moiresh. You've done your thing in this world. You brought about in this world an awareness that there's a creator. Avraham Avinu was this. Those powerful words. Uben Nesek, Uben Damesek Eliezu, who Yoresh Osi. I don't have a child. Is the Midah that Avraham inherited from his father Terach. Terach is not a Pashtuna person. Proved you is not a Pashtuna person. He's in the Haggadah. We didn't put him in the Haggadah for nothing. He's the own say, Elokei Terach, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. But there's something there, yeah?
Who authorized, maybe I'm expanding too much, Avraham to mess up Terach's idol shop?
No one. He did. Avraham did. Avraham did. Now when the father before my Sibra, before my entire life.
The Gemara discusses it in great detail.
The answer is no. Avodah Zarah, no.
He was much the nefesh, unnecessarily. And so the Gemara says we don't talk about it. The Chumash doesn't mention it. Doesn't want us to get the idea that you could just put the life in danger if somebody is not starting up with you.
Different times. It's before Matan Torah.
It's a man, you know. We don't talk about
before Matan Torah, different times.
Right. No, I was concerned about Kibbutz of the
A. Well, the Pasuk says, Ish imo v'yavati rov yeshab sosai tishmaru. The Gemara says, the parent tells you, Mechal Shabbos, you don't listen.
But that's on a different...
That's Shabbos. So Solomon comes up with Zara.
Straight Easter of Shabbos.
Yes.
Here,
it's even greater. Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is even worse. Okay, so this idea, I think, is an extremely powerful yisoidistika idea we're learning over here, this little medrash, the debate between the Nimrod trying to convince Terach to give over the son, his response, the point of disagreement, and that point of disagreement is something which Terach invented. You live for the next generation. He was moirish to Avram, and Avraham mamish says the same words to Hashem. It's not worth anything if I can't be moirish what I've accomplished to the next generation. Terach was concerned about money. I want to give the cash, the gold and silver to my children. Avraham was concerned about giving over the spiritual gold and silver, what he created, the awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world, to the next generation. Okay, now let me just tell you some little cute midrashim. You probably know this. They teach this in kindergarten, but it's still very cute. It's different. When Avraham Avinu had a disagreement with his father Terach. Terach, he had a parnasa. No, you do all strange things with parnasa. He had an idol, a store where they sell idols. So you know some of these funny stories. Just review them if you have not heard them. Once a woman comes into the store and says, I want to offer a mincha, a meal offering to the idol. So Avraham Avinu says, which one do you want? So she selects an idol. So Avraham Avinu, then he takes a hammer and he destroys all the idols. All the idols, millions of dollars worth of pottery. The museum, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, he wipes them all out and he puts the hammer in the biggest idol. And his father comes and says, what did you do? You lost billions of dollars. A woman came and offered a meal offering to one of the idols. And the other idols got jealous, and there was a world war, and the strongest one won, the survivor, and that's why he has. In other words, that was his way of mocking. His father said, nonsense, idols can't do this. Listen to what you're saying, father, idols can't do this, what's all that? Okay, the other measure, I like that, this is my favorite measure, is where a woman comes in and says, I want to buy an idol. So he says, how old are you? 60 years old. So Avraham Avinu says, oi, you fool! 60 years old, this oil came out of the oven yesterday. A 60-year-old should worship a 1-year-old? This is how Avraham Avinu, he saw the MS. He saw the MS. He did it. Well, that was the issue. Did he believe it? Did not believe in it? Okay, let's go to another idea. Okay, now this is an interesting medrash. This medrash is called the Chagiga medrash. It's interesting if the Chagiga doesn't come from this. Why did we know that Nimrod wanted to throw Avraham? He did throw Avraham into a Kivshon Ha'esh. How did that come about? I don't know the details, but it seems that Nimrod worshipped fire. That was one of his idols. Fire. At one point in time, he met Avraham, and he was trying to convince Avraham that he should worship fire. So the Medrash says, Avraham said, they had a debate. Why should we worship fire? But water is stronger than fire, because water puts out fire. So Nimrod said, you know, you're right. You're right. Water can extinguish fire. Let's worship fire. Bow down to the water. Avraham then said, why should we worship water? Clouds are greater than water because clouds can carry water. So Nimrod said, you're right. Let's worship the clouds. Avraham then said, let's worship man. Because man can withstand wind. Let's worship the wind, because wind can come and blow away the clouds. So Nimrod said, you're right, let's worship the wind. Avraham says, let's worship man, because man can withstand the wind, or the man can hold. You can have the wind, the spirit of the life is called wind, it's inside of the person. Let's worship a man. And that's where the Medrash ends. So that's where the Medrash ends. But at that point in time, I guess Nimrod was very upset. I'm interpreting the Medrash. Why was Nimrod very upset? Because Nimrod wanted everyone to worship him. Yeah. And now when Amram Avinu was reaching the conclusion that you're nothing special, every person is a god. Since we've gone to the process, you told me we should worship fire. Fire comes to water. Water goes to clouds. Clouds goes to wind. Man can withstand wind. Man stands still simply and the wind blows. Doesn't blow away man. Man can withstand wind. Or maybe it means man can carry wind within him. So therefore we should worship man, a human being. Nimrod did not want to hear that because Nimrod was the only man who others can worship. So what did Nimrod do? Nimrod said to Adam, to Aram, it's nonsense. Let's go back to the very beginning. Fire. Let's start all over again. Let's worship fire. Aram said, I'm not worshiping fire. No way. You don't want to worship fire? I'm going to throw you into the fire. That's how it all came about. It came about through this debate. Now my question to you is, since Nimrod was willing to go all the steps until he came to man, should a Nimrod agree have changed his philosophy? And if you want to worship something, you should worship wind. The only time Nimrod felt threatened was when Avraham went to the next step. Well, if we're going to worship the wind, let's worship man, because man can withstand wind. That was something Nimrod did not want here, because Nimrod did not want any competition. Okay, so what will we worship? Let's just go one step. Let's backtrack one step. And we should worship wind. No. Nimrod said, we're going to go back to the very beginning. We're going to worship fire. You learn here in Musa Haska that Rishoyim, wicked people, it's either my way or the high. I don't know the my way or the high, but when they have a problem, they don't have the ability to even see any small degree of truth. Nimrod was going along. When he was shown that the logical conclusion of MS leads to competition, that forced him to go all the way back to his mistake in the very, very beginning. Okay, I don't know how to phrase it to put in the right words, but in life sometimes when you can't reach the very end, at least try to go as far as you can. People that are not stable, if they can't go all the way to the very end, unfortunately they go to the extreme. They start at the worst possible place, the worst possible mistake, which was a Nimrod start. Nimrod started by worshipping the fire. Alright, that's just one little short idea. Now let me come to another quick idea. The timeline. Okay, let's just go through the timeline. This is very interesting, the timeline. There's a Medrash. The Medrash tells us, asks the question, when, at what point in time in the life of Avram was he makir, did he recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So there are three opinions. First opinion of the Medrash is when he was 3 years old. This is the Shita of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish and the Medrash Rabbah, Avram was 3 years old when he was Makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, Rabbi Hanina and Rabbi Yochanan disagree, and they are of the opinion that Adam was Makir HaKadosh Baruch Hu when he was 48 years old. Now we'll come to the significance of 48 in a few moments. And then there is a third opinion that says Avraham was 50 years old when he was Makir, his creator. Okay, so we have three opinions. 3, 48, and 50. Now let's figure out the significance of these numbers. How old was Avraham Avinu when he was born? Avraham Avinu when he was born was... How old was the world when he was born? 1948. How old was Avraham Avinu when the world reached the age of 2,000 years old?
52.
52, exactly.
So
He was 52. Now the Chazal tell us that was the point in time in the world when 2,000 years of Tohu reached its conclusion, when the 2,000 years of Torah began. Okay, the world is divided into three different points. The world is 6,000 years according to Chazal. The first 2,000 years were Tohu, just nothingness. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tolerated a world of nothingness for 2,000 years. Then comes 2,000 years of Torah. And then comes 2,000 years of Yimos HaMashiach. When did the 2,000 years of Torah begin? In the year 2000, right? 2000. How old was Avraham Avinu at that point? If Avraham Avinu was born in the year 1948, that means he was 52 years old in the year 2000. Now, what happened when Avraham Avinu was 48 years old? 48. was when the Tower of Babel came to an end. Tower of Babel, they were dispersed. Parshas Noach, that's our tradition. This is Seder Olam. Seder Olam is a Medrash, tells us about the history of the world. Arvin, the Tower of Babel, was when the people came together, when Nimrod, who was the one that organized the Tower of Babel? Nimrod. Everyone should come and rebel. Nimrod was worse than all of the pagans before him, because they denied HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence. Nimrod recognized HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence. Yedei Ribbono Umschavim Limabo, he brought the world to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem confused them by changing their languages, and they were dispersed. At that point in time, that what year did that happen? That happened in the year that happened 1996. Our Avinu was 48 years old. At that point in time, according to Chazal, Avraham was makir his creator. It's a very important, it doesn't say this explicitly, we put this together. Because all Chazal say is he was 3 years old, 48 years old, 50 years old. Now, 3 years old is a medrash, which means he was in a cave. When Avraham was born, he was in a cave. He was hidden in a cave because they were afraid that Nimrod would kill him. Nimrod was trying to kill him because Nimrod saw in the stars that this person would be born that would come and threaten his malchus. So he was in a cave. When he was 3 years old already, he had a hakara, a natural hakara, natural. 3-year-old child, to a certain degree, has certain natural instincts. See, those are children. When they're 3 years old, their mind develops. How did you know that? How did this little kid figure out all these things? It's a certain gift every human being has, you recognize. 3 years old, he already saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu naturally. When Aaron was 48 years old, when the world, a major world event happened, people were dispersed to all four corners of the earth and Tower of Babel, Hashem spread them out. Aaron Avinu, he was makir Hashem in a different way, through observing the Bria. Through the Bria, he looked at the world and he saw man's conduct. By reading the newspaper, you also can come to a recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The big world event of the time was the Tower of Babel. The world was united. They came together to build this tower to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu very cleverly caused them to be confused by changing their speech, and they were dispersed. Avraham Avinu was watching these events. He came to a new darga of Yediyas Hashem. The Midrashim are not choylik. It's not, this one says 3, and this is 48, and this one says 52. They're different types of hakara of what happened. Now, what happened next? Now, let's go on, let's diverge. According to Chazal, when the Tower of Babel was destroyed, when they were dispersed, that's when began the war, the 12 and 13 years. At that point in time, there were 4 kings against 5 kings. The 4 kings worshipped, how does it go? The 4 kings worshipped Kidola Omer. How did it start? It started off, the Shtei Mesrei Shana of Duas Kidola Omer, they served him for 12 years. Ushloish Esrei Shana Maradu. And then for 13 years they rebelled. For how many, grand total of how many years? For 25 years. 12 years they served Kidola Omer, and then for 13 years they rebelled against. When did the serving and the rebellion begin? Those 25 years began exactly after the Tower of Babel. So we go take, the Avraham Avinu was now 48 years old, and we fast forward 25 years. So where does that take us to? What age was Avraham Avinu? 73. But what? 70, but we're going to add one more year, really 2 more years on each side, because the Tower of Babel came to an end. And in the following year, right thereafter, that year concluded with that event. Now in the beginning of the next year is when the world comes 12 years, comes 13 years, and then breaks out a world war. A world war breaks out where the law comes, you want to rebel against me? 13 years? Enough is enough. I'm going to go to war. World War begins and Lot is captured. How old is Avraham Avinu at that point in time? He is 75 years old. At that point in time, what does Hashem say to Avraham Avinu? Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha. What is Avraham Avinu doing? What is Avraham Avinu doing in Haran? Isn't Avraham Avinu at that point in time already in Ur Kasdim? So the answer is, he went back. Okay, this is another Chazal. We have to put all these different events. Avraham Avinu started out in Haran. He went to Ur. He went. Oh wait.
It starts on Vayavoa Haran Vayishu Shal. Terah had to leave because he was persona non grata, according to a lot of
people. Yeah. Okay.
Then
okay.
Then he came back. You know.
Okay, but he left. He left Ur Kasdan. Right now he's leaving Lecha. But this is just an interesting idea to be aware is that Aaron Avinu was told Lech Lecha to leave Ur Kasdan at the same time this world war broke out. It's exactly the same time. Now let's go back to the number 52. The number 52. What's the significance? Aaron Avinu was Makar Kadosh Baruch Hu when he was 52 years old. When that's 52 years old is the time when the world is now
just about breaking out.
What's the significance of that point in time? So the Medrash says that is, during those 4 years, after the fall of Bavel, when Aaron Avinu was 48 years old, until Aaron Avinu was 52 years old, those 4 years, is when Aaron Avinu, now when he was Makar Kadosh Baruch Hu, he recruited converts. V'yes hanefesh asher osu b'choran. This pasuk, v'yes hanefesh asher osu b'choran, reached its climax in the year 52 years after Aaron Avinu. When Aaron Avinu was 52 years old, which means it took him 4 years from the time of the fall of the Tower of Babel, for the next 4 years, he went out to convince the world to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It took him 4 years to build up an institution, to build up his yeshiva, and the Eshanefesh Asher Osu B'Choron reached its climax when Aaron Avinu was 52 years old, which was year 2000. It was the year 2000. Then, fast forward 25 years later, is when they had the Maisa of Lech Lecha Me'artzcha, to leave Eretz Yisrael. Now what about when did the Bris Ben Avsarim take place? The Bris Ben Avsarim, let's go further. A lot of things happened very quickly. Let's just finish up with this point. At that point, Aaron Avinu was 75 years old. Hashem tells it. Now, right before he left, a few things happened. Before he left, Aaron went to save Lot. See, it's not the way it's written in the Torah, it's not the order. He went to save Lot. There was the world war, and Lot was captured. And he saved Lot, and then was the Bris Ben Havsarim. Achar Hadavarim Ho'ele, according to all the Mefarshim, took place right after Aaron Avinu's the wars, the four kings, the five kings, and he miraculously saved Lot. Was the Bris Ben Havsarim. After the Bris Ben Havsarim, now he was 75 years old. Vayomer Hashem El Avram Lech Lecha. So it comes out, according to the Seder Olam, the order in this week's parsha, and what follows is not correct. That's out of order. The ikar, when we start now in this week's parsha, by Yoimer Hashem El Avram Lech Lecha, that's after everything already happened. That's after the Tower of Babel fell, and Aaron Avinu, he was Makar Kadosh Baruch Hu in that incredible event, and then for the next 4 years he recruited neshamos, the Yetzer Nefesh also of the Choran. And then he was 52 years old. And that was the year 2000. And now, jump ahead a couple more years, that was during the time when they were rebelling, they served Al-Kilomar, they rebelled against Al-Kilomar, and then there was a world war. And then Aaron Avinu went to save Lot. And he almost got killed, and Hashem saved him. And then there was a Bris Ben Avsarim. And then, now Hashem promised Aaron Avinu, guess what, you're going to have an Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to give you an Eretz, I'm going to give you children. I'm going to give you an Eretz Yisrael. And then Hashem says now in the beginning of this parsha, now that all of the foundation has been laid, Vayomer Hashem El Avram Lech Lecha. Let's get moving here. Let's get the show on the road. So you're learning the parsha. I don't know what this is called when you study English literature. They tell you they first show you the end. There's a technique in writing. They start off by showing you the end, and then they tell you Oh, that was, let's go back 2 weeks earlier. Let's go back on
the
flashback.
And then the whole story, how did we get there? It keeps your attention. It's a very good technique in writing stories. You start with the end. Wow, what happened? How did that happen? Oh, let's now go and let's give you the history. It holds your attention. Now, the Torah is not coming to hold, it's not a novel, it's not coming, but that's really what the Torah is doing for a different reason. The Torah is starting off with the very end. Lech lecha. Get out of here. Get out of Ur Kasdim. Then the Torah goes on to tell us, where did that come from? Lech lecha. Go to Eretz Yisrael, let me give you a tour of the land I'm giving you. How did that all happen? Well, let me give you some background. The background is, during the time of the Tower of Babel, we went through all these different things, the 12 years, the 13 years, and all of these events, which built up to Lech Lecha. Okay, I thought this was a very interesting idea to learn about. It's not in the proper order, all based upon the numbers, the 75 years. Just a couple of interesting ideas which I'm able to glean from this first chapter of this Sefer about the life of Avraham Avinu. Okay, have a wonderful day.
All right.